Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. Our speaker today is Regina Lewis. I'll tell you a little bit about Regina. And Regina, if any of this is inaccurate, please feel free to correct me. With 15 years of experience in leadership development, Dr. Regina Lewis has served diverse clientele, from executives to scholars, government agencies, educational institutions, and nonprofits. Through the travels, Regina has been immersed in many cultures, both nationally and internationally, in Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and across the United States. Regina has began her extensive work in the area of families and individuals in need as a team member of counselors at the Women's Resource Agency and as the board chair for Pike Peak Community Action Agency. Dr. Lewis holds a doctorate in educational leadership, research and policy, a master of arts in communication, and a bachelor of arts in communication, as well as a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology, all from the University of Colorado at Colorado Springs. Additionally, she has published in books, journals, and higher education textbooks. Without further ado here, I'll hand it over to Regina. But before I do, during this call, since we have so many people on, we're going to have the lines muted. Let me do that now. And so if you have questions during the call, the way we do that is if you will email them to questions@ahaprocess. We'll have a 15-minute Q&A session at the end of the hour. So you'll email us again, questions@ahaprocess.com. And what I'll do is I'll feed those to Regina as she finishes her material at about 12:45 Eastern here. I think that's it. If you have any other questions that are not related to Regina speaking, feel free to send those to that same email address, questions@ahaprocess.com. So, Regina, if you'd like to get started.
Okay. Well, top of the morning and afternoon to all of you. I'm Dr. Regina Lewis, and I would like to spend the next 45 minutes or so having a conversation about powering up your presentation, connecting with, and holding your audience's attention. And during this time, I really want you to be able to get out of this how to, get key processes, presentation skills, enhance your audience's engagement, and also drive higher levels of positive response rating. What I find to be really interesting and what got me into this particular piece is watching individuals do presentations, and I see them all the time. I'm quite sure many of you have as well. But what happens is that we get those that fall on a continuum, anywhere from the beginner to the elite. But most of the speakers that we find are the ones that sit somewhere right in the middle, and they're the ones that has presented several times. However, they have not refined their presentation skills. I work with a lot of individuals who are presenters, who are speakers, and that's what they do as a job, but they come to me to refine and fine-tune their presentation skills. And so the information that I'm providing today would really be for those individuals who are speaking, have had some experience with that, or have seen others who have spoken and really want to know, how do you really take it and kick it up a notch? So that's the areas that I really would like to go into. So to begin my presentation, the very first thing I want to talk about is to be a social composer. And I thought about that because I think about composers and how they construct music and how they think about many different areas to really bring something that is entertaining and enjoyable to its listeners. And that's something that we all want to do. And one of the first areas is to listen to your audience. This is really circled around audience analysis. Who is the audience that you're going to be speaking to? Now, as you're presenting, you may have materials that's already been set up for you, and so you figure, well, they know who my audience is, and so all I need to do is go in and present this particular material. But really what you want to do is make it unique, make it your own. You want to own your presentation, and your audience will actually feel it and see it so that they won't feel like it's just a package deal, something that you just opened up and then gave to them, but you really invested your own self into it. And the way to do that is to first listen to your audience. find out who are these individuals. You want to really have a feel for what it is that they need. And a little bit later, I will talk about building rapport and how that would actually play out. In addition to just listening to your audience, you want to engage by creating content that connects with your audience. So when I say engage with your audience, it's about really thinking about who are the individuals that are sitting here today. Are they the exact same group that I was with last week? Possibly not. So what do they bring? What are their experiences? What are their concerns? And being able to take the information that you have and then to be able to connect it with them, then they will feel like you are there specifically for them. Additionally, you want to construct your information in a logical way to tell a story. There's a researcher by the name of Fisher, and he is the one that studied narrative theory. And he says that we're all storytelling animals. And what we do is when we tell a story, our audience can actually follow the information easier. So to be able to tell a story is extremely useful. So typically, just to give you a little story, I have actually gone in and have done many, many different presentations, and I walked in one day and I thought, oh, how am I going to get this thing started? What is it that I'm going to say to this particular audience? Well, I started to tell them about being prepared even when you're not prepared. And I was able to share with them a story about me coming that day and all of the different incidences that took place on my way to meet with them. It brought laughter into the room. It really set my audience up for listening. They were able to follow along with the point that I was actually trying to drive. And my point was that things may be complicated, but at the end, when you're ready to go on stage, you get your composure together and you leave all of the troubles behind. So that's just one very, very simple example. But as we go through, I'll be providing you with more information and more detailed stories. So moving on from being that social composer, a composer, I would like to move on to building rapport. Building rapport with your audience is extremely important. It really builds relationships. The audience starts to feel like they know you and that you now know who they are. You can even use some of the information that you gathered during the building of rapport in your actual presentation. That's another way to connect with many that's in your audience. So some of the tips that I have is to talk to people before your presentation begins. And you can do this simply by introducing yourself, shaking hands, get them to talk about themselves and why they're actually there. This is all part of that analysis as well, analyzing who your audience is. You'd be able to use some of the information that you were able to discuss as a part of your presentation. It makes for a more interesting day and one in which your audience starts to connect with you. The other is to have your audience's best interest at heart. What you want to do is see your presentation. You want them to see your presentation as an opportunity for them. And you, yourself, would want to see your presentation as an opportunity to serve your audience, not to impress or sell them, but to actually serve them. What we make a mistake of doing is some of us are not as comfortable with presenting as others, and so we stand up and we begin to get very, very nervous. We start thinking of all types of things that could go wrong and the fact that they're all looking at us. Well, I've got a little secret for you. It's not about us at all. It's really about your audience and engaging in them. You're just a tool to be able to deliver information which they would be able to use. Some people look at you to say, wow, if that person can do it, I can do it too. because for some reason you resonate with them. They can relate to you, or they feel like the two of you have something in common. And so that's what you really want to build upon. And if you find yourself being nervous, just know that at the very beginning, introducing yourself and having a conversation with your audience can actually help to put you at ease. Talking about nervous and putting yourself at ease, it comes to the point of establishing eye contact. Now, I'm going to tell you, many people do not make eye contact with the entire audience that they have. What I find people doing is they look above their audience, look between the audience's head, or they look to one side more dominant than any other side. When we do that, then the audience starts to feel like there is a disconnect, and that's not what we want to do. We really want to connect with our audience, so you want to make that eye contact and really make eye contact with everyone that's in the room, keeping yourself mindful that, wow, I've been looking to the right quite often. I need to go and look to the left, maybe even walk over to the left a little bit. Now, one of the things that I always say that would be very helpful is to find a coach in the audience. A coach in the audience is that person that when you make eye contact, they're nodding and smiling, maybe even laughing a little bit. That really helps to put your mind at ease. You could even ask somebody to be your coach in the audience, but this becomes very, very helpful. So I want to tell you a little story. I remember my first time doing a major speech. I was speaking to about 800 individuals, and I brought my own personal coach with me. He was about, I don't know, maybe 3 feet tall, if that. It was my son, Charles, and he had to be no more than 6 or 7 years old, little guy. So we go strutting inside the building, ready to present, and when I went in, my breath was almost taken away because there were so many people waiting to hear me speak. So I had already told him what I needed him to do. All I wanted him to do is smile really bright with those big eyes and just nod his head up and down. I got on stage. It was time for me to begin my speech, so I began like this. Good evening, and welcome to the 22nd Annual Freedom Fund Banquet. I'm your host, Regina Lewis. After I said that, I first realized that I said 22nd Annual. It was the 82nd Annual. So I started to get a little bit nervous and flustered. I could feel the heat rise into my face. And then as I was thinking about that, I looked out into the audience, and I noticed that my public speaking instructor from when I was in college was sitting in the audience. I thought, open the floor and let me fall in right now. I was really, really nervous. So right away, I shifted my eyes to my coach. And as I looked down at my son, he took his chubby little fingers, he pressed them onto the seat, and he started to get up. And I'm thinking, what is he going to do? He can't walk away. I can't go get him. I'm here on stage. So I'm trying to nod my head, you know, shake my head, no, no, like stay there, but look normal in front of the audience. All of a sudden, my son stands up, puts his hands on his knees, and he squats a little, and he starts to nod his head back and forth, high and low, laughing and smiling. I was so embarrassed. I was ready to fire my coach that day, but it really did work, and I was really happy. But that's just a little story. When you do really have a coach in the audience and that person is nodding, then you look at them for a few minutes. Once you feel at ease, then you're able to shift your eyes and your body a little bit to the right. As you start to begin to get nervous again, quickly shift your eyes back to your coach to get that reassurance. And once you feel comfortable again, you may begin to shift your eyes and body to the left. And then possibly behind your coach and then back to your coach, in front of your coach and back to your coach, to the right, to the left, side to side, and back and forth to your coach. So your coach is your home base, and it's really, really helpful. The other is when you begin speaking, you want to speak very simply and with confidence and with conviction. You really want to talk to your audience and let them know, I am here to have a conversation with you. I'm not here to lecture. I'm not here to give you a report, and I'm not here to read information, but I'm really here to have a conversation with you. The highest compliment that any speaker can receive is that they are conversational. So just keep that in mind. Again, just keep your speech simple and speak with conviction. You want to approach your presentation from your audience's perspective. Through your rapport, building that rapport and relationship, you will know what perspective your audience is coming from. Whatever your topic is, for instance, when you're talking about bridges out of poverty, are they the ones that are really coming from an individual perspective? Are they coming from a organizational perspective or from a community perspective? Knowing that information, you would really be able to tailor your conversation. And if it's a mixture of all, then make your presentation a mixture of all. Be able to address that. And as you're addressing it, you may notice someone in the audience that specifically is looking for that specific information, and you would be able to make eye contact, make a smile, and nod your head at them, and they would say, wow, they really, really did pay attention to what it is that I'm saying. And lastly, when building rapport, you want to dress appropriately. And when I say appropriately, you want to know your audience enough to say, are they relaxed today? Is it, down day Friday? Is it a Saturday? Is it where they wear business attire or business casual? I say err on the more conservative side. Being business casual is probably your most safe haven. You don't want to dress down because you want your audience to know that you are there with credentials. To know how to actually dress, again, ask the questions. Wherever the site is and the person who is having you come, ask them what is the dress, and always make sure that you dress a little bit above them. For me, I've always made the mistake of dressing very, very professional. Always had on high heels, always wore a suit, whether it was a pants or a skirt, and sometimes that was over the top, and it made individuals feel uncomfortable. So I found a way to dress somewhere in the middle with that. So always think about how you dress, because that also builds rapport and you start to seem to be more relatable to your audience. So keep that in mind. Now, I'm not really sure if we take questions in between. David, could you let me know, because I can pause for questions. Or should I go through the entire presentation?
Well, there's nothing yet, but if you'd like to pause as questions come in, I can certainly find a point where it would be easy to ask you. But I have no questions yet, so you're good.
Okay. Well, just let me know. If you have some questions, I'll be more than happy to stop in between. But audience, feel free to ask questions at any time, because one thing is for sure, I have a master's in communication, so I can definitely talk until doomsday. So make sure that if you have any questions, to please send them in, and I'll be more than happy to answer them at that point. But moving forward, let's talk about beginning with the end in mind. That's a phrase from Franklin Covey, and believe me, I use it in more ways than not. And thinking about beginning with the end in mind, the first thing that I want to say is be clear what the purpose of your talk is. This can be done in many, many different ways. When you first stand up to speak and you've introduced yourself, you've had a little bit of conversation to build rapport with the audience at large, then you can be very clear by saying to them what the purpose of your talk is, or you can have it on your PowerPoint presentation, and if you do, make sure that you explain what those purposes are. Looking back at this particular presentation, I presented that in a way of talking about what you will actually obtain. And I spoke about key processes, presentation skills, enhance audience and, engagement, drive higher levels of positive response rating. So as you, the audience, is listening, you're listening for information that would address that in which I said that you would have actually obtained. So keep that in mind. I think that that's probably the most important piece at the beginning of your presentation. Also, when you are talking with your audience, explain what your audience can expect. Now, they want to hear from you what you feel that they should expect. But even before you go and talk to your audience, when you are preparing your presentation, even though you have the material, you want to organize it in a way, you want to structure your talk with this in mind. Every slide, every piece of information, all of your examples and stories, you want to make sure that it goes back to connecting with what the audience can expect and the purpose of your talk. So make sure that you have those particular pieces. Now, again, those are areas that are at the beginning of your speech. However, there's also something that you want to do at the end of your speech, and that is review what the takeaways are from the talk. What are the, you know, out of a 50-minute talk, what are those nuggets that the audience should be able to take away? Remind them of that. They may have their own list that they've been keeping as you've had the conversation, but you want to be able to reiterate that and be able to tell them, these are the important areas, or these are the takeaways for you. What that does is it reminds your audience over the material that you've discussed in the past 50 minutes. That's one. The other is that they will say, you know what, I'm inundated with such awesome information, but I don't know how I'm going to remember it all. I don't know how I'm going to be able to put all of this together. So if you're able to simplify it for them and give them some key takeaways, they would really appreciate that. You can have that on your last slide. You can say that to them in a discussion. You can even ask the audience, what would you say are the takeaways from this talk? And create a list. Write it down for them, keeping in mind that your audience are they learn and take in information many, many different ways. You have those who like to just listen, the auditorial type. You have the visual learners, the ones that want to see the PowerPoint. They also want to, you've got those that want to see you write something on the board. So then you have those read-write individuals, or you have a handout. You can actually type up some takeaways and use it as a handout at the end of your presentation. This is something that's very powerful for the individuals. And then, of course, you have those who are kinesthetic. They want to be able to talk too. They want to apply it right then. So that's why it's a great idea to ask them, because kinesthetic learners want to talk to each other and say, well, this is what I take away. There's a little quick exercise that I do that really addresses many of the different learning styles, and that is think, pair, share. If you're not familiar with it, then what you would do is pose a question such as, what are the takeaways from this presentation today? And what you would do is say, well, I want you to think about that for a moment, and you have them think about it, and then you have them turn to someone next to them, so they're going to pair up, and they're going to give that information, talk about it amongst themselves, and then give them an opportunity to share that information from a few of the volunteers in the audience. So that's called think, pair, share, and that's a really, really good way to engage your audience. And as I'm thinking about your audience pairing up and talking, sometimes you leave your audience to talk amongst themselves over a point that's been made, or you're taking a quick break and now it's time for everyone to focus their attention back towards you. And sometimes we can't get their attention. It becomes very, very difficult. You start to talk, and they're still talking. You tell them that we're about to begin, they're still talking. So there's a couple of tips and tricks that you can do. One such trick is that if they're taking a 5-minute break or longer, maybe even a 3-minute break, you can actually play some music in the background music, not really loud, but just enough for them to be aware that that music is playing. And then when it's time for them to turn their attention back to the front, if you turn the music off, not at the very end of the song, but before the song ends, it's such an abrupt change in the atmosphere that your audience then starts to pay attention to, okay, there's been a change, and that's an easy way to draw their attention back to you. Another thing that you can do is that you can tell them, we will be gathering back in approximately 1 minute, and then you start counting down. You have about 20 seconds left. We now have 10 seconds. All right, it's time for us to begin again, so that they are powering down and they're ready to pay attention again. The last suggestion that I have is that as you start to see that their time is drawing to an end, then you can actually walk around to individual groups and just say, we're going to be wrapping up here in a minute. Can I get your attention to the front? Thank you so much. And you'll start to see that your audience is ready to listen and engage in your conversation again. So those are just some areas to think about when you are considering the end of your presentation. So begin with the end in mind. Now, one area that I think is really critical is the area of delivery. The delivery of your presentation can really make or break a presenter. To me, that's my own personal opinion. It's that area where I say you can grab your audience's attention and hold it long after they've left. And how do you actually do that? Well, there's many, many different ways to do that, but I want to talk on some key areas. The first is the beginning of your presentation and the end of your presentation. Always begin your presentation with some type of attention grabber. Provide them with a statistic, some profound statistic. Or you may tell them a short, interesting story. And believe me, when I say short, I'm talking seconds, not minutes, and staying focused on a point. So make sure that you drive a point with that. And be careful on those stories. Another one is to ask them a rhetorical question, not a question in which you're waiting for them to actually answer, but a question that becomes thought-provoking. So this is just a way to get them started. Now, at the end of the presentation, go back to your attention grabber, because by going back, your audience will know that's the cue to say, truly wrapping up. Many individuals make a mistake of saying, in conclusion, and it's not the conclusion because they keep talking. I call that listener's abuse. And so we want to be careful not to do that. If you are nearing the end and you've announced that to your audience, make sure that you stick to that. They will really appreciate it, because no matter how interesting you are, people do get tired of listening, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later. In addition to that, you want to think about your vocal intonation. I'm quite sure that many of you remember the classic movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off and his teacher on there. Anyone, class. That was just showing how monotone the instructor was, and no one listened. They were ready to go to sleep. Can you imagine going to the movies and everything is monotone? I don't think many of us would last. We'd either go to sleep or we'd leave the movie. So you want to make sure that you have intonation variety, vocal variety in your presentation. And then you also want to move that variety into your gestures. Some people say they don't know what to do with their hands, but I cannot believe that. Because if you're excited about some news, Can you imagine somebody coming up to you to tell you something that happened so amazing to them with their hands to their sides and never moving them? I don't think it would even work. You'd actually have to give them some gestures. The amazing thing about gestures is it helps the actual speaker recall information. There's research that talks about gestures and how it helps recall information. It also drives your point. It provides emphasis on what it is that you're saying. And then it also helps your audience to follow along and feel your presentation. So gestures are extremely important. I've seen people do what I call the penguin. They put their arms to the side, and all they're doing is moving their fingers, and it looks like a little penguin. Others will grab one arm and hold the other arm down. I call that the tourniquet because their hands start to turn blue. So you want to be careful about that. Still, others like to hold pens and papers in their hands. Those things become distracting. Others like to move their hair out of their face. Once in a while, that's fine, but we don't even realize that we start to do this over and over again. So really being cognizant of your gestures and using them with purpose is extremely important. Make sure that your volume of your voice is loud enough. I always suggest, and I've done this through research, so it's not original information for me. But when you are speaking, you should be able to project your voice so that about 35 to 40 people can actually hear you without a microphone. Using a microphone is definitely more professional sounding. But you still want to be able to project your voice so that your audience can hear you. But you don't want to yell at the same time. So if you have a mic, make sure that it is not so close to your mouth that you become muffled or pulled away from your mouth so far that people cannot hear you. You want to make sure that it's somewhere in between. The pace of your voice and how you're speaking needs to be even keeled. There are some people that want to talk really, really fast, and then they slow down. What you want to do is keep a natural pace. As a matter of fact, talking about pace, a lot of times people will fill their conversation with That's a filler, or like, or they use some other word in between. And the reason they do that is many. There's a lot of research on that. However, my rendition of it is that it's a pace that's going off in your head. We have a pacer that goes back and forth in our heads. We can hear this. We don't hear it, but there's this unconscious pace that goes on that helps us to speak at a smooth style so that we don't sound choppy. But if we forget something or we're trying to recall information, we feel like we have to fill that pace with something, so we fill it with It's almost like listening to music. So I just want to ask, you know, this is a rhetorical question, how many of you listen to music? And if you listen to music, how many of you keep the beat of the music? It's almost like snapping your finger. That's kind of like what goes off into your head. And then all of a sudden, when you're speaking and you need to stop and think, you still hear this little thing going off in your head. So you fill it with But what we need to learn how to do is just turn that thing off for a minute and take a pause. There's nothing wrong with silence while you think. And then you go back to what it is that you were saying. Your audience will appreciate that, and it will keep you looking very smart and with credibility. As you're talking, make sure that you keep the energy. You want to sound enthusiastic, and the way to do that is to own your material, be passionate about it, care about what you're saying, and it will resonate into your audience. Move away from the podium. You don't want to stand behind your podium, if all possible. If you're locked in by a microphone, find out if you can have a microphone that could be attached to you or that you can hold your microphone. And walk into your audience. Connect to your audience. You don't want it to be a thing where it's you and them. You want it to be us here together. We're all learning together. And then also remember, out of all of this, remember to smile. Smiling is imperative. Even if you're saying something that's extremely serious, make sure that you break the monotony with a smile. A smile sends a message that I am happy to be here, and I welcome all of you being here. A smile can be heard across the room, believe it or not. So make sure that you smile. As a matter of fact, you can even hear a smile over the phone. As I'm giving this teleseminar, I'm actually smiling, and you would be able to tell the difference if I were or were not. I would like to move on into the PowerPoint presentation and what it is that you want to pay attention to in this area. Many, many, many of us use PowerPoint. As a matter of fact, in Bridges Out of Poverty, we have PowerPoint, and that's fine. But what we want to do is make sure that what we have on the slide is going to aid us in the speech, but not become the speech. So keeping that in mind, you want to have very little to no text. You do not want to have a lot of text information on there. People will ask you for your slides oftentimes. But if you don't have much narration on there, if you don't have a lot of text on your PowerPoint, then the slides that you would give to them would not be very useful without you. So, and not only that, it will also afford them to take notes, to really pay attention to what it is that you're saying, as opposed to all of your information on that PowerPoint, and then you're just regurgitating information. So be very careful. When you look at each one of your slides, look at it and see if your audience could understand the information within 3 seconds. If they cannot, then that's a telltale sign that there's too much information on there. Now, I realize that there are PowerPoints that are already built for us. If there is opportunity to build in some of your own slides with information that was given to you, then it's a really good idea. You want to create your own slides instead of using a template. Make it unique to yourself. And if you are making your own slides and you want to place pictures on there, avoid clip art or other cartoonish line art. That's not the professional style at all. What you do want to do is use high-quality graphics. And I would say that if you're using some type of graphics, then look for something that is medium to large, you know, anywhere from 340 by 340 on up. 400 is a really good size, without making your presentation too large, you know, as far as memory goes. And then lastly, in the PowerPoint presentation, is to keep the lights on. Sometimes we look and say, well, you know what, the screen is not bright enough for people to really, really see all of the images on the screen, so let me turn off the light. What happens when we turn off the light is that some people fall asleep. They're tired, especially if it's after lunch. You know how that happens. Or it gives them an opportunity to have sidebar conversation. And then, if nothing else, you've turned down the light. They don't really see you that well, but they see the PowerPoint. And what you want to do is you want to draw your audience's attention on you and what you're saying, more so than that PowerPoint presentation. So keep that in mind. I was looking at new ways of doing PowerPoint, and I came across something called Presentation Zen. And this is kind of like that feng shui style of PowerPoint. And the researcher behind this is Gar Reynolds. And Gar Reynolds really does give some really good information on having simple slides that are clear, crisp, and to the point. So here is just a list of things that I gathered from his information. You want multimedia effect, and that is narration with pictures. So your slides, you know, having more pictures and then you actually having the conversation is the most powerful. Then you want modality principle, and the modality principle is story or conversation rather than text. And so, again, having those stories behind what it is that you're saying and limit your story to one idea. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Then there's the redundancy principle. People learn better from narration and graphics rather than narration, graphics, and text. And then finally, coherence principle, which is remove extraneous visual material. You don't want a lot of material on there. I'm seeing that we are getting close to the end, so I just want to give you just a few more pointers. One is cognitive science, and making sure, when I talk about cognitive science, this is by Rich Meyer, and Rich talks about the way people process information. So as you are getting ready to present, remember these three things. Dual channel, separate visual and verbal information, limited capacity. People can only pay attention to only a few pieces of information in each channel at a time, and active processing through relevant material organized into a cohesive and coherent mental structure. And what you want to do is integrate their prior knowledge into new information. This will make your presentation powerful. So let me leave you with this. Be lyrical and memorable. To do that, here are my key points. Be enthusiastic. Show your passion. Bring out your personality. And show that you are credible, logical, and empathetic. So at this time, if there are any questions, I am more than happy to answer them.
Sure, I have a couple questions. And before I feed these to you, I would remind everyone listening that that email address is questions@ahaprocess.com. Regina, the first question comes from Bainbridge, Georgia. Debbie asks, when presenting bridges to a diverse group, including people in poverty, how do you make sure everyone is comfortable with the information and not feeling singled out? I've had both people in poverty and people in wealth come to me privately after a session and talk about being a bit offended.
All right, Debbie, thank you for asking that question. The way that I address that, I do culture inclusiveness, and so I run into that as well in that arena. And to be able to talk in terms of we, or putting yourself as I as opposed to they or you is one way to do that. Another way to address that is to make sure that you give parallel and equal example for both positive as well as developmental areas in all levels. That is poverty, middle class, and wealth. So make sure that you provide equal examples, as well as anything that you present, you do it across the board so that they can see it in all areas.
Great, okay. So it looks like those are the only questions that came in via email at this point. Regina, if you had 5 or 10 minutes more of material you wanted to go over, we could do that. Or I could simply unmute the lines and see if there's anyone who doesn't have access to email who'd like to ask some questions verbally, whichever you prefer.
Well, let's do that because I'm looking at the time. I'm hoping I'm keeping on point with the time. It's about 9:45. I'd love to open up the lines of communication and have conversation.
Oh, sure. Let's do that. And *4, or is it 4-star, is the way you unmute your line, if you've muted your line individually as well. But at this point, if anyone has comments, questions, anything you'd like to say to Regina, this is your chance.
This is Debbie. Erin, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question regarding like all the different fillers. What are some of the first steps that you take with people that are giving presentations to get them to first recognize and then address that habit?
So you're saying if you are the person in the audience and you hear someone else doing it?
More if I were to coach others that are in that habit of using those fillers consistently, what would be some recommendations that you could offer to help break that habit?
Absolutely. There is actually a four-step process that actually you could use. The first one is incompetent unconscious. That means they don't even know that they're doing it. And so what you would do as the coach is to start making tick marks so that when they're done speaking, you would say, I don't know if you realize, but you had 47 ums. And they go, really? Are you kidding me? Well, that's because they were unconscious of it and they are incompetent. They don't know how to fix it. Then after you brought it to the attention, they will then recognize it so that as they're speaking, they will hear themselves say it and you'll see them kind of react. They'll have body language or they'll do a couple of nonverbal or verbal cues that says, I recognize that I'm saying it. At that point, they're now conscious about it, but they're still incompetent. So you continue to work on it by letting them know, pay attention to that. When you feel like you're about to say an then what you want to do is take a pause instead. That will sound very mechanical, but it is a process in moving them away from that particular habit. So then what you do is they will start to notice it, and they will stop themselves. That's when they become competent and conscious about it. So they are conscious about it, and they are competent because they are fixing it. But what the goal is over time, as they start to notice, they will start to obtain a flow in their speech, and they will get to a point where they are unconscious competent. Then you'll tell them, you know what, when you talk today, I only heard two ums, and they're going, really? I thought I did at least 30, because they don't even realize that they fixed the problem. So it's recognition first, so you help them to recognize it, and then they go through practicing and catching themselves until it becomes a natural thing not to do it again.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is Diane from California.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, I have a question. I wonder if you could go over again the information from Gar Reynolds, the presentation about and you called it the feng shui. Could you just go over it again?
Oh, yes, Presentation Zen.
Pardon?
It's called Presentation Zen.
Okay.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, he has some great materials. He has a PDF. If you were to Google his name and put in Presentation Zen, there's extensive information that's in there. But what I talked about was multimedia effect, which is narration with pictures. There is actually a new type of presentation style that came out of Japan. It's called Pechakucha. People pronounce it different ways, and all they do is use pictures and narration. And it's so big, and they've done this because they wanted to cut down the amount of time spent building slides and the amount of time presenting slides. And so they have what's called 20 by 20. It's 20 slides, and you spend 20 seconds on each slide. And you're able to tell an entire story, and they found that people are able to obtain more information with that style than any other style. And so now they have Petra Kucha groups and competitions all across the world.
Huh.
So, yes, it's a very – so you want to put in presentation then and then Petra Kucha. Let me see if I can spell that for you.
Right.
I'm typing it out right now to see if I can remember. Hold on. Petra Kucha, it is – hold on just a second. Petra – okay, it's spelled P as in Paul, E as in Echo, C-H-A, and then the next word is Kucha, K as in King, U, C as in Charlie, H, and the letter A, Petra Kucha.
Ah, great. Okay, thank you.
Yes, oh, you're so welcome. So
I'll
welcome.
Do search on that. Thank you very much, Regina.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
I have a question.
I definitely invite. Okay, yes.
Go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. I got an email question from a Lorraine. Who asks if you could give us some more details on the points related to cognitive science, and also if you had the source, she would love that.
And also have the what?
The source.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The cognitive science is by Rich Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, and he talks about cognitive science. And he's saying that as you're putting together PowerPoint presentations or any type of presentations, to really look at the science of cognition, the way that we think, and understand that there is a specific way in which people process information. So the first one I talked about was the dual channels. And the dual channels is that we separate visual from verbal information. And so if we start to inundate individuals with both, too much of both, then it becomes overwhelming. But we're stimulated by both. So there needs to be a balance of both of them in your presentation, something that's visual as well as verbal. That's where PowerPoint came from in the first place, because we used to do presentations without PowerPoint, without slides of any type, and then we understood that that visual piece was important. Then there is the limited capacity that we have to make sure that we keep in mind that we can only pay attention to a few pieces of information in the visual and a few pieces of information in the verbal. So make sure that you keep a balance, but you don't inundate it with it. A lot of people will put a lot of words on a PowerPoint presentation, and then they want to read from it. That's very mechanical. We shouldn't even be reading slides. There should be just a word or two just to be able to illuminate for our audience the point that we're trying to drive. And then lastly is the active processing. And what I mean by the active processing is saying that we need to make sure that we have relevant material and that it needs to be organized into a coherent mental structure. So in order to make it coherent to your audience, we need to be able to take new information and connect it with prior knowledge. And that comes through your stories and through short examples. And that's how the audience is able to connect and be able to follow the information and be able to learn new information.
I have a comment related to that from Rebecca Lawson, who apparently is having trouble. I guess her line is muted and can't get unmuted. But she says, story is very important, I think. However, when I've used in presentations, I've had members of the audience say sometimes that there's too much story, like they didn't want to hear the story. And she's how to strike the right balance there.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, the story needs to be relevant to the information that's being delivered at that particular point. The story, although it may have a lot of information to it, really needs to be cut down into just a small chunk. If you can spend a minute on a story, a minute, minute and a half on a story just to get the point. That's where it best fits. If you're giving any details, the details need to be relevant to your point. For instance, when I talked about my son and, you know, his chubby fingers and his size, that is to say that your coach and the audience can be of any age. And how they react also stimulates how you will respond to that. So the way he got up off of the seat, how he bent over and touched his knees, you know, if you could see me in person, then you could see me crouching down, and it looks pretty crazy. But it's all the details need to be relevant. Otherwise, cut the details out. That's why people complain about stories.
I think we've got time for maybe one more question, if anyone has anything they'd like to mention. Otherwise, then we'll wrap up. Okay, well, thank you, Regina. I've really enjoyed listening to you speak for the last hour. I've learned a lot. I hope everyone else has as well. Regina, I believe you're available to come speak. Is that correct for consulting? So,
absolutely.
If you'd like to bring Regina into your community, please give us a call at AHA Process. So the information is always in our emails on our website. So at this point, we'll wrap up. Thank you again, Regina. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All have a great day.